Hey everybody, welcome to Weekly Beats. A quick note about this episode. This was actually not a new one. This is something we recorded months and months ago, even before the end of the year content for 2017. It's a review of Bath's Romaplasm, and also a 30-second breakdown of the song Too Good at Goodbyes by Sam Smith. This is before we got new microphones, and the audio quality is somewhat raw. You're getting the raw Weekly Beats experience this week. We'll be back with regular stuff next week with a review of David Byrne's American Utopia. But for now, just like take like a chill look back, you know? I mean, like, it's free, so relax or whatever.
Welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the week in music. My name is Charlie.
Hi there. My name... it's Mark.
And this week on the show, we are ready to dive into what will end up being our last official discussion for the year 2017. That's Bath's latest album, his third album, Romaplasm. Be the focus of our discussion today. Then, as always, we'll turn to the Billboard Hot 100 to talk about the latest highest charting single. A sinkhole in the ground? Is that what they're calling them these days? I don't know. But it's a single. It's Sam Smith off his hotly anticipated sophomore album, The Thrill of It All. That single is Too Good at Goodbyes. Be prepared to cry, I guess, feel emotional. In the back half of the program, we'll be talking about a bunch of other stuff we've been listening to in preparation for our year-end festivities. But Mark, we are post-Thanksgiving here. We are sandwiched in between the month of holiday festivities here. It's soon to be December. You and I are hotly gathering our top albums and songs of the year. So
we're hotly doing that.
We got to stay hot at this time of year because it's cold outside. So how is it hotly going for you?
I'm just getting all sweated up, one album above another, putting two albums beneath this one, and putting myself above all,
right? As one does this time of year. What's the sweatiest album of 2017, Mark?
You know, there's probably an argument to be made for the Bass album.
Yeah.
But I think we both know that the Pharmacon album is extremely sweaty.
I don't like that. That's a bad kind of sweaty.
It's an authentic sweaty, though. You have to give it that.
If Baths is a good sweat, then Pharmacon is the worst sweat you could possibly have.
Like, Baths, like, you finally beat your goal. You wanted to run a 5-minute mile, and you did it. You nailed it after so much hard work. You ran the 5-minute mile. You're sweaty, and you feel good. And Pharmacon is like, you had way more Taco Bell than you thought you should, and now you're at
awake
work
at 4 in the morning. At the same time, you're both at work and awake at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And you just can't stop sweating.
This is a nightmarish scenario for sure.
Perfect. The soundtrack to that. That's Pharmacon. Check it out.
I am particularly imagining your job being sweaty awake, covered in taco dust for the morning.
I'm sweaty awake and covered in taco dust. Let's get to work, boys.
Of course, you are the factory manager.
Yeah. I'm the foreman.
Mm-hmm.
Those tooling dies ain't going to press themselves, Mark.
How many factories do you think are left in America? Like 8?
No, I was going to say 17.
17?
One in every other state. So about 17.
Yeah. This is why we need to refocus our efforts on infrastructure.
Agreed. We should drop our efforts here and become factory workers. Well, you should become a fact worker. I'm a foreman. I've worked my way up in the system, so.
That seems fair to me.
Capitalism. All right, so let's get into our discussion of Romaplasm, the latest album from Baths. Mark, you are the resident Baths fan here. Not to say that I'm not, but certainly you like his stuff a whole lot more than I do, or at least you have for longer. So why don't you tell me about that?
It came across like you were sensitive overly about not being the Baths expert, residentially speaking.
I just don't want to assume anything.
Yeah. Baths is a man, and I don't know if you've ever gone onto his Spotify page and looked at his like artist profile picture.
I'm gonna do it right now.
Yeah, tell me when you get there.
All right, I'm there.
Okay, just continue.
He's in a cloud of smoke.
Just keep scrolling.
Hey, there he is. Oh wow. He's in a tree.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. He's holding a little dog. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I found that earlier today and thought that was quite odd. No, I like Baths a lot. I have been following him since his start as Post-Fetus in the late 2000s. At least I think that was his first thing. I think that was him. And I feel like he is in some ways this like natural next step from like the Postal Service or something.
Yeah.
Like if that style of music had sort of kept, in the trend of, modern sort of like alternative pop music, like I feel like we'd be getting a lot of Baths, but as it stands, all we have is Baths. So I cling to him.
You love that.
I do. That Give Up was like such a big album for me when I was 14, and I just kind of sink into this stuff real easy. I found him a very relatable artist.
Yeah, it's like your comfort zone, musically speaking.
That and like atonal fart machine bubble bath generated sound makers.
Mm-hmm.
Those two.
You love it.
Mm-hmm. And hair metal.
Right. So Romaplasm here is album number 3, as I've said. Is it hotly anticipated? I don't know that it is, but it's his first album in 4 years since Obsidian, which was a tremendously heavy record, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of interesting the way that he transitioned his sound, which was so sort of playful and exuberant and emotional, into an album that is full of evocative imagery, really stark commentary on the nature of death. And of course, he was gravely sick when this was happening, right? He was like bedridden for a year or something like that, right?
I didn't know that.
I thought I read that somewhere, like he was actually seriously ill, and that's what caused him to write that stuff.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, but still a powerful album, an intricate album, still contained all of his quirks and pops and little glitchy things that he does with his electronical sounding stuff. Here he is on Romaplasm, and this kind of feels like the natural synthesis of Obsidian plus Cerulean. I don't know if you felt that, Mark, but it's got kind of the lighthearted playfulness of Cerulean with the technical achievement of Obsidian. For me, this album gets better and better every time I listen to it, and wow. I liked it a whole lot the first time through. This thing, I think, is extremely consistent front to back. The sound he's cultivating here is very specific but very enjoyable. Interestingly, a lot of the lyrics seem to focus on fantastical ideas like airships and super space travel outside of the galaxy, but if you're into that kind of thing, I think you'll have a good time with it.
Yeah,
it's interesting also the way that color and emotion has shaped his previous releases, with Cerulean being a nice calming blue, Obsidian a very dark, heavy gray. And this is sort of a light green meets yellow, springy color, suggesting maybe new life and rebirth after the heavy death of Obsidian and the literal death on Earth Death, the EP he put out in between then and now.
Ocean Death.
This feels... What's that?
Ocean Death. You dumb.
Is that what I called it? Earth
Death. You called it Earth Death. It's called Ocean Death.
That's the song that's on there, though.
Earth Death is on Obsidian. That's the final track.
That's
why. Oh, boy. I certainly proved who is a resident bass expert today.
That's why you're here. But on Ocean Death, he has literal death there. Here he is kind of reborn and reinvigorated with a sense of whimsy and playfulness and just wanting to have a good time with his little synthesizers. What do you think about this?
How does it feel to be so readily beaten?
Like weekly beaten?
Yeah, you just got weekly beat, my friend.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, more like Charlie Death.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is your bath. It's a shame bath.
I hate those. They're always too cold.
And you're still sweaty, even in the bath.
You can't get out. For 44 minutes, you have to stay in the cold shame bath.
Stay in the shame bath.
Aw. And your clothes are on. You can't even take your clothes off.
Oh, man. I would love a good shame bath right about now that we brought it up. Oh, I'm actually kind of hot. I don't know. I feel like I'm coming down with something or something. I don't know. But what I wouldn't give for a shame bath and a podcast.
Yeah.
So I think for me, I think that's really interesting. I think I see his career as pretty linear too. I think you're right that there is a kind of through line between those albums. And I think the way that his career has worked is that Post-Fetus album is extremely cheery and it's a kind of emotional album. You know, it's not... It's kind of like, you know, the rest of D'Antel's work, the guy from the Postal Service wrote all the songs.
Right, right.
I think he's a little more accessible, and he has a sort of, you know, there's a little bit of a bittersweet kind of nature to that album. And then moving forward his career with Cerulean, it just kind of strengthens in that aspect. It's brighter and it's darker, too. And he released an EP called The Nothing in between that and Obsidian that is in that style, but it is an extremely depressing single. And every time I feel like he releases an album, musically and narratively, he seems to have picked up things in his life and included them in his music. His sound continues to get more complex and a little bigger. And it's like watching a human being grow, like... in real time. Like like listening to all these is you get such a good idea of where he is at in his life and you can take a real guess at the kinds of experiences you've had. Like I didn't know that he was sick when he wrote Obsidian, but the elements of fear and loss and the fear of pointlessness and existence are real heavy in that thing. And I think here the music is heavier, like his presence is heavier. So even though he's kind of come around and there's, I think, a lot of really fun poppy kind of love songs and analyses of gender roles in a kind of positive way, I think the weight of the world is sort of within that too. And I really like that. I really like listening to this and sensing how he was grounded, even though his head is still in the clouds, I guess.
Yeah. And there's a great lyric on, I think it's Yellman, that actually calls that out explicitly by saying that, you know, I'm here on the ground, but I'm also taking off in the sky.
Yeah, he's getting high. That song's about means. Crack.
I don't think so.
Pretty sure.
He says in Yellman, left my life on the ground to dance with you in the clouds.
Yellman's his drug dealer.
Oh, no. Let's play a little bit from Yell Man.
Okay.
I think it's an awesome opener. I think it sets the tone immediately. The songs all kind of exist in a similar space to that. Some are slower, some are faster. and some maybe have a bit more of the sounds removed, but all are intricately layered with overlapping beats and rhythms and glitches and sounds and pops and vocals. It's so interesting to my ears just to try to trace similar ideas over the course of a sound and hearing something come in or out. He also uses strings to, I think, great effect on a number of these tracks where by the end, the electronics sort of fade out and the strings come in playing a nice glowing melody underneath it all. I think they are really gorgeous, intricate tracks, all of these things here. Always very interesting to listen to.
Yeah, I keep coming back to that word too, intricate, because there's a million things that are layered over top of just about every track. And there are, in most of the songs, several moments where the sound totally changes for the chorus.
Yeah.
Especially in Abscond, I think it is, when there's literally a beat of silence and then the song changes entirely.
And we get those strings coming in, the kind of like, you know, violins and whatnot coming in.
Yeah. It's really cool. Like, it's a little overwhelming to listen to.
Yeah. But I would say it's rewarding when you listen to it, that the more you stick with it, the more you pick up on and the more you can tune into.
Yeah. And I love that this album is so positive in the ways that it is. And I love that intricacy, it makes each song feel so restless. You know, even though I feel like he's so sure-footed in his sort of what the theme of each song is and where the song goes, just it's like each instrument is like sprinting on and off stage or something. There's just so much to pay attention to and think about.
Yeah, let's play a little bit from Abscond. That's a good one. There's a little hesitation there, that little like stop like you were talking about. But you love the way he strips away the sounds there just to let that simple tone melody play through. I think it's really gorgeous. There's, again, just a sunniness to this, a playful nature. I just feel good when I listen to it, which is certainly not what I had listening to Obsidian 4 years ago.
Yeah. And there was in Cerulean, I feel like he uses a lot of flowery language to describe love and, you know, joy, happiness, what it feels like to be outside, be living life, being a young man out on the streets, holding a puppy in a field. And I feel like with the EP that followed that album, The Nothing, he's just talking about how he's lonely and he doesn't do anything. He just sits and watches Netflix at home. And it's like deeply sad. Like, it's troubling to listen to. Yeah. I feel like that mundanity has carried through to Obsidian, which is, you know, granted a little more melodramatic, but that sort of like mundanity in the realities of most of what an everyday looks like with that same sort of optimism, like both are present in this album. So I don't know. I'm really fascinated with that stuff.
Yeah.
Like think about coitus.
Right.
Just think about. Rarely
think
in
about
life
that.
Do I
conceptualize that? That sentence doesn't come around every day, Mark. You gotta appreciate that.
I always want to take a step back and think: how rarely have I said "think about coitus" to another human being? That song is kind of unromantic. It's kind of it opens with like squeaky bed noises, and there's something just kind of boring about the sexuality as it's portrayed in that song. But it comes around as being kind of human and sweet in the end, and that is a more mature and complex portrayal of sexuality in music in coitus than I've seen in most music this year.
Yeah, definitely. I think another really strong emotional track for me, sort of on the opposite end of that, a more reflective, somber piece is Human Bog.
Oh, that's really good.
I mean, lyrically, this might be one of the strongest songs on the album. The repetition in the phrase, queer in a way that... and it's kind of altered and changed in each stanza. So like the one that we get first and foremost is queer in a way that works for you. And so we're considering the way that, what is Bath's name? I don't know Bath's name.
I don't know.
Well, Bath is trying to express his sexuality, and maybe others are saying to him like, oh, you know, you're queer in a way that works for me, or not maybe acknowledging it in those words, but the acceptance in behaving a certain way and exhibiting your sexuality in a way that's deemed appropriate for your certain demographic, and then you say later on, queer in a way that works for them. But then also at the end, it's queer in a way that's failed me. He says, not enough of anything. So we get the sense that even though he may be exhibiting these traits outward to fit in with others, he's not truly representing himself and who he is. And so we're finding that even inside of queer sexualities, there's a lot of room for diverse representation there. It's not just a one-size-fits-all. Again, even though there's a label attached to that, we shouldn't expect those who fit into that label to act or behave in a similar way. I think it's really powerful songwriting.
Yeah. I on purpose did not go and read any of the lyrics because I wanted to just kind of take this thing straight as possible.
I understand that.
Do you think there's something about media representation in that song?
Yeah, I think so. Because it's putting the emphasis on an outside observer expecting someone or something to behave a certain way to fit into a preconceived mold or what they want. And so if you're putting it on like the media, that's the way they portray meaning is through, symbols and reducing things to their most commonly understood base. And I think that's what's going on here.
I think he also in that track tackles a lot of he tackles both masculinity and femininity and the way those things are parallels, and I found that track pretty deeply relatable. I found there's always these sort of outside pressures exerting or outside forces exerting pressure on your ability to determine how you feel about how you are, and I feel like the way that track is contemplative works for it super well. It's one of the only moments on the album where things are real pared back, real slowly paced. And as a result, it stands out, which I think was a really smart choice for that narrative.
Yeah. Man, the flow of this album, just from like the first half, I think is so solid. He's got such energetic tunes, but he knows how to balance it with more somber tunes like Human Bog. Mm-hmm. Just a great flow opening up here. And then he launches into Adam Copies, which is absolute insanity in the best way. I love this track. This is energy to 11, intricacy to 11, alternating polyrhythms and weird stop-start stuff. There's K-pop influence inside of this thing. It is a hot mess that made me want to play Dance Dance Revolution more than any other song this year. And that's a compliment. this song is amazing.
So, okay, we've already established this is the horniest month in Weekly Beats history that can be tied to Darude Sandstorm.
Yes. This is a child of Sandstorm.
Oh my god. Truly a visionary track. Would you agree?
It's insane. It's insane. Oh man, is it so good.
Sandstorm?
Yeah.
Are you being serious? Do you love the song Sandstorm?
I mean, who doesn't? Do you not love Sandstorm?
I don't know. I can't say I do.
It's been overplayed, but man, that thing is transcendent. That thing will exist long after we've died.
It won't. Won't all music?
I mean, some less than others.
Oh, what a depressing thought. I want to last forever.
Let's play a little bit from Adam Copies. And this is like just from the beginning, just to get a sense of how crazy this thing is. Great stuff.
Yeah, pretty intense. Pretty intense.
And lyrically, it just starts off on a great foot. You better do what they say, kill all evil in the way. That's... Abide by tactics of the maze, no compassion in the blade.
Oh my god, I can totally see anime characters dancing to that.
Exactly.
He's also a big like anime kind of guy, I think. So that I feel like that comparison's probably on point.
Yeah. Let's go a little bit further to the more craziness here. I love that just pulsing, pounding rhythm inside of this thing. It's infectious. It's headbanging. It is everything I love in music.
Everything you love in music.
Right there.
Really?
Not everything. It's a hyperbole, Mark. Jeez, settle down.
Our audience expects honesty from its hosts. I think I just refer to our audience as its. Okay. Like Buffalo Bill would.
I don't usually subscribe to the Rap Genius interpretations, but I think it's important to bring out some extra note in the final chorus. He says, if this is where they eat me, Gendo, I will become as fire, eat the woods, eat the dark, and show where I stood, become as fire. And the name Gendo is highlighted, and it says that this track is heavily believed to be inspired by the anime series Neon Genesis Evangelion. And this line is most likely referencing Gendo Ikari, who is the protagonist's father, who is consistently negligent and cruel towards Senji throughout the series.
This is an extremely millennial album.
Yeah, man. That's why I like it so much.
So, okay, now that you've explained that track to me, help me out with Wilt.
Okay.
Did it
Let's play a little
you?
Bit from Wilt. I assume you're asking if the groveling vocal delivery scared me in the voices.
Yeah, primarily, yeah.
You know what? I thought, like, ooh, is that frightening to me? Do I not like that? And then I decided, no, actually, it's okay. I think the backing beat is soothing enough that I can take it more as kind of a slow, low delivery there. I'm thinking back to Perfume Genius's whole thing, like, it's weird here. I can't feel... And that whole thing is far more horrifying than anything here. At least the beat is good. And that track also has those horrifying violins going... And then he comes in and starts talking about how it's weird here, and I hate that.
So, it's like he's sounding like he ate the microphone.
Yeah, it's deep in there.
It's all here, here.
Perfect. No, it's not as horrifying. And I think the backing beat is really satisfying. There's sort of a little fuzz... to the percussion side of the track there, but yeah, I think it's pretty good.
It's like weirdly captivating. It's like,
yeah,
again, like one of three moments on the album where things just totally drop out for a minute, and the first time I heard it, I'm like, what? I get totally caught me off guard. Like, who's talking to me? What is that? What am I listening to? Is this a Dracula?
It's buried in there. Yeah, it's kind of a whisper inside the track.
Yeah. It's like a guy in like a bathrobe in the dark, like whispering to me. I just felt uncomfortable.
Some of the lyrics through the part are a little bit creepy, like I'm craving your skin.
Yeah.
And October wind is prevailing again, but I'm okay with it. I think it's fine.
What is to stop October wind? What is it prevailing over?
I would assume summer.
I fought weather today and I lost again.
Well, that's a battle we'll always lose.
True that. Yeah, this is a great time. The only track, I was kind of surprised that Extra Solar was a single.
Really? Oh, I like Extra Solar a whole lot.
I like Extra Solar too. I just feel like it's such a like second track on the album kind of deal. I feel like there are more singly songs to be taken from this thing, and I was kind of surprised that this was one of them.
Well, like what?
Well, like what? I think I-Form is pretty nuts.
It is really good. Broadback?
Broadback's pretty much of a single.
Yeah. Out, maybe? Oh, Out is a single, I guess.
Oh, is Out a single? Okay.
I think it is.
That Adam copies. I just feel like, well, maybe Extra Solar is more palatable or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not as nuts as Adam copies. Let's play a little bit of Extra Solar. I love the little like skip beat that's going on in this thing. It's like the whole song, you feel like it's like off kilter. It's like walking down a hallway with one leg a little bit shorter than the other. But I like that a lot. I think it sounds really compelling. It's different. And I think the chorus is really strong. Get off, world. Get extra solar.
Yeah. I guess.
I like that he's commanding the world to get off.
That's my point, though. It's like usually when you're trying to present yourself to a mass audience, a descriptor of your music being having one leg shorter than the other walking down a hallway is not apt. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I like it a lot. I was just surprised.
I think also we get some more of the adventurous nature of Yao Man here. You know, I'll live a long while, on occasion I'll dream of Earth, suggesting that there's a greater life and adventure outside of this planet. Plus that line, think of all the junk I jettison and what it does for me. What a great line that is.
That's really good.
That's good writing, man. Lots of good lyrics on this thing. But it's so, like, the lyrical delivery is so embedded in the layers of other sounds that it's hard to pick up on every single word all the time. And unless you're looking them up specifically, you're probably going to miss some of those.
Yeah, they're really busy songs. They're very, very complicated songs.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, you know, there's something to be said for an artist like Perfume Genius, but, you know, we have... We have a Becky on, you know, occasionally, or an Emily, who are maybe a little less willing to listen to something that is, you know,
weird,
unfamiliar. Yeah. I feel like Baths is one of the artists that fits in that space that I would gladly recommend to pretty much anybody.
Yeah. And I think it's someone that maybe doesn't attract the hugest of audiences, but it's someone that's kind of like the ultimate crowd pleaser. Like, if you are into it, then like the radio listeners and the deep audiophiles are both going to find different stuff to appreciate about it and come to a mutual love.
Yeah, like there's like an open-hearted nature to the way that this album is weird. There's like something like naturally compelling about like 15 synths making different noises, and they're all really fun, you know?
It's like a really busy cuckoo clock with like little German people like making things with hammers on the outside, and they're rotating around every hour.
You think it's like that?
I don't know. I'm trying to come up with a good visual.
Okay.
What do you think about Tim plastering his face right in the middle of this album cover? That's kind of a bold statement from this guy. I feel like he's known to be just kind of hanging out in the background, letting the music speak for itself. He's very in the front and center here.
Let me go into my spiel about the album art.
Okay.
Stop holding me back. First of all, I like that he is laying on broccoli. Second, I feel like this album's primary characteristic emotionally is vulnerability. So the idea that it's his face for the first time plastered on the album, and that it's not an unflattering picture of him, but it's not like a super, he's not making himself look super good or sexy or whatever, right? Like,
let's put it this way. It's not a Sam Smith style of picture.
Exactly.
Here.
I love it for a lot of reasons, because he got the bandage on the finger, like he is a wounded person. He has a look on his face like he is not sure what is about to be expected to happen.
And a little bit of apprehension, a little bit of fear.
Yes. And the hand that's placed on his neck could be either threatening or reassuring or intimate. And that sort of...
Or somebody else's or his own.
Sure. Sure. You think that's his own hand?
It might be.
I don't think it's his hand.
I mean, logistically speaking, it could be, because it's a left hand there, and he's got his right hand, the one with the bandage on it.
Right. I guess, but that would be a weird angle, don't you think?
No, you could do it.
I mean, you could. That's a
yeah,
big
I'm doing hit. It right now. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh my god, I'm impressed. Okay, I was just saying, I think what this Almar is communicating, though, I think it's like the idea that intimacy demands vulnerability.
Yes, that's good. And you might get hurt along the way.
Yeah.
But might also discover a beautiful sun rising on a far-off planet.
What do you think it's about?
I think it's that. And I also think there's something to the color there. Like I said, like the blues and the grays and now the green and the yellow. Mm-hmm. I think the mood is very much backed by the color that he chooses to use. I was trying to find... Aromaplasm isn't anything, is it? Like, is it a color or like what's the connection there? Because cerulean and obsidian have like color correlations to them.
I honestly thought about looking it up and I thought, I kind of don't want to.
I'm not going to. I'm going to leave the mystery there.
Yeah, I'm sure Charlie's going to explain it to me.
Not this time, Mark. Not this time.
Maybe it is ghost jelly.
Okay.
Roman ghost jelly.
That's what makes the most sense to me.
Okay, good.
This album rocks. This album is consistent. This album is intricate and carefully orchestrated. This album is emotionally intelligent and intellectually intelligent. It is a great ride from start to finish, and it's getting my highest recommendation.
Your highest recommendation is getting the Charlie Double Thumbs?
Double thumbs up on this one, boys. Move 1,100 copies to everyone's grandmothers for the holiday season. Let's get this thing on the airwaves.
Real question, how would your grandmother react if you had her listen to this?
She would be amused, but not really in a way that she's like, That classic grandma, that's nice.
Oh, that's nice. Your grandma's patronizing to you. No offense.
She's working on it. We've talked.
Okay. We'll work through it.
Let's go to the highlight reel. I'm going to take four. And you know what? I'm going to take that extra solar just to take it because I like it a lot. I like the little hobwobble it's got going on there.
Okay.
I'm going to take Yo Man, which I think is a great opener. I'm going to take Human Bog for its intimacy and lyrical quality. And then I got to take the big king daddy at the top of this thing, Adam Copies, which is monstrous.
Monstrous.
Woo!
Cool list.
That's a good list right there. That's a good list.
Second best list on the show for this episode. Because I'm going to take Yeoman. Yeoman.
Yeoman.
Yeoman. I'm going to take Superstructure.
That's a good one.
I'm going to take Human Bog.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take Eye Form.
You're not taking Adam Copies?
I'm not taking anything. I don't have to.
That's insane, Mark.
Stop telling me how to live my life.
All right. Well, it's a four-track takeable. It's a four-track worthy album. Really good. Give it a listen if you haven't already. Let's take a quick break here, Mark. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Sam Smith. So stay tuned. All right, we are back and ready to talk about the latest Billboard offering. This week it's Sam Smith. Mark, are you a big fan?
Hold on, I'm not ready. Okay, now I'm ready.
Sam Smith?
Yeah.
Are you ready for Sam Smith?
Oh, wait, Sam Smith? No, wait, I'm not ready.
Okay, well, it's going to come whether you want it or not.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that he's going to do that.
He's doing that black and white face profile album thing.
He's dealing it.
He's doing it.
Adele.
Yeah, he's Adele-ing it. Just, I'm so glad that at least now Sam Smith is doing this black and white album cover thing so that his next album, he can't do it. There will come a time when no one is allowed to do this anymore because everyone will have done it, and that's it, and we'll put
Charlie,
it to rest.
That is never going to happen. You are enormously naive to believe it will.
I'll believe until I'm proven wrong.
This is never going to change. It's never going to end. You're looking, you're asking the impossible.
You know what I'm not?
Asking the possible.
Too good at goodbyes.
You must think that I'm stupid. Mm-hmm. You must think that I'm a fool. You must think that I'm new to this. But I have seen this all before. I'm never gonna let you close to me, even though you mean the most to me. Cause every time I open up, it hurts.
Sam Smith is just male adult. Adele, right?
Male adult.
Male adult.
Like Nega Adele.
Well, not Nega Adele. He's just like the male version.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Not, the more I'm thinking about what you've said, the more correct it clearly is.
He's singing a song about saying goodbye to somebody he loves. Check. He's got a black and white picture of his face on the cover of an album. Check.
Adele did the James Bond theme, and then he immediately
did
the
James
next
Bond
one.
Thing, right? Double check. He's just going to put his voice front and center. It's not about any of the backing instrumentals. Mm-hmm. Your mom probably bought the album. Was one of the one album she bought this year was either Adele or Sam Smith.
Correct.
Did he win like a voice contest or something? Was he like one of those guys?
I think that's distinctly possible.
I feel like he won a Britain's Got Something.
Britain's Got Singing. Nobody Let's thought that we could sing. Here. Turns out we could. Britain's Next Top Adele. Is actually what he won.
Yeah. No, he did not win any Britain's Next Top Something. But he did feature on the Disclosure song Latch, and that got him some credit.
And got him. What happened to Hozier? What happened to that guy?
That's a great question. Let's Google him.
Somebody took him to church, and he never came back.
He was only ever going to release one album.
It was just an earnest plea for someone to give him
David
a ride.
Church! Last thing he did was write a new song for the Legend of Tarzan soundtrack back in 2016.
Okay.
Once you go Tarzan, you never go back.
Wow. Oh, man, I went full Tarzan last night.
I would say if we don't hear from Hozier next year, he's done. But I think we will.
If we don't hear from Hozier next year, he has been killed by jungle animals.
You must think that I'm stupid. You must think that I'm a fool. You must think that I'm new to this, but I have seen this all before. I'm never going to let you close to me, even though you mean the most to me, because every time I open up, it hurts. So I'm never going to get too close to you, even when I mean the most to you, in case you go and leave me in the dirt.
Wow.
Some really insightful songwriting from Mr. Smith here.
Yeah. I feel like
very few Billboard annotations this week. I'm disappointed. Genius is letting us down. There's almost nothing here.
I wonder why that is. I don't think Genius has fully graduated. Like as a brand, they are trying to be less hip hop, more everything. But I don't think they fully graduated to that yet. Like, I think their audience still leans pretty, like, primarily into the, like, hip-hop and R&B kind of crowd.
Conversely, there may just not be a whole lot to say about this thing.
We have read annotations for songs that have nothing in them that can't be
You're
true.
Right. You're right.
No one wrote an essay about Post Malone because of his literary value.
Who sucks? He sucks. Sam Smith, this is coming in from the refrain there. I'm never going to let you close to me, even though you mean the most to me. Sam Smith told Billboard, I just wanted to come back with something that updated you, my fans, on my love life. which is still going terribly. Later it says, however, the refrain tells a story of someone who is now concerned to protect himself, having learned from experience and assertiveness that was missing from the passive, lonely songs on his first album, In the Lonely Hour.
The Lonely Island.
Let's see if we can hear a little bit more of this thing.
So I'm never gonna get too close to you, even when I mean almost to you, in case you go and leave me in the dirt. But every time you hurt me, the less that I cry. And every time you leave me, the quicker these tears dry. And every time you walk out, the less I love you. Baby, we don't stand a chance. It's sad that it's true.
Wow. Perfectly partitioned sequencing there, huh?
It's almost mathematical in the way it's broken down.
That's
seriously,
impressive.
Though. It's frightening how accurately these things break down to 30-second chunks.
Sometimes, yeah.
You hit the right beats per minute. You hit the right structure of verse, chorus. Suddenly you're looking at just a matter of mathematics and formulas that have been around for decades now.
Yeah, and speaking of mathematics, I feel like that exact chord progression is in an Adele song.
Yeah, and it's just piano here, man. Hello. Yeah. It's me. Never gonna let you close to me, even though you mean the most to me.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down.
I get that Sam Smith is technically a very accomplished vocalist. Like, he's singing way better than I could ever hope to dream to sing a song. But I just don't find his voice all that compelling.
Yeah.
I find it kind of frail. And maybe that's part of his appeal, is that he is kind of that soft, sensual, open-hearted kind of guy. But I don't know. When he gets up into that falsetto range, I don't feel emotion. Like, I do sometimes when I listen to Adele. I think that she does have a great voice that can be powerful. I don't feel the same way listening to this guy.
I think it's partially because he doesn't have a hook the same way that she does.
That's true.
Nearly any facet. I mean, whenever the opening of Hello is kind of iconic, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
It captures that moment so well, that phone call so well. It's such a good idea of telling that story with Hello, It's Me. Like, that's so good. You Must Think That I'm Stupid is not as iconic of an opening, I don't think.
It's his first song back on his first album back, and his first line is, You Must Think I'm Stupid. Not as stupid as you are for buying this.
Wow. That would be kind of amazing.
And then it kicks right into a trap bit, and then comes Young Thug. You're so stupid. Can't believe you bought this. Tug it.
That's pretty good, man.
Thank you. We're working on that.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like you need something to distinguish you. I feel like even comparing this to that Hozier song, that song, there's like some simple kind of emotionally full concept that you can, no matter what else happens in the song, it could be so simple. You always can return to that and contextualize the feelings that way. Like, it's not enough to just, like, this is pretty basic level poetry right here, right? This is like high school notebook
poetry.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even call it poetry, man. That's how basic it is.
Maybe I have a less favorable view of poetry than you.
Let's try to get to the chorus. Let's see if he hits the big notes in the chorus.
I'm way too good at goodbye.
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 I know you're thinking I'm heartless. I know you're thinking I'm cold. I'm just pretending.
Man, I was so sure you said, let's see if he hits the big nuts during this chorus.
He comes in swinging. Did he hit the big nuts?
That's what I was wondering.
I think
he definitely hit that big nuts. I don't know if he's utilizing those choir vocals so much.
And I always stand by, like, if you've got to bring those in to bolster your performance, that means you're not doing a good enough job yourself.
do you think that Kanye song did a bad job at that?
Well, I mean, there's a time and a place for it. I think you could bring him in by the end to elicit a feeling, but if you're opening up the chorus with those there, man, like, is it your show or is it their show, you know?
Yeah, this is totally, you've gotten this idea in my head. This is totally, like, B Adele.
It's like, you know how there's that one song, like Christmas songs, right? There's like the classic Christmas tune that's like the one person did really well, and it's become kind of the like keystone version of that song. Like when you hear a Jingle Bell Rock, you're going to hear this one specific version.
Right.
And then everyone else that does Jingle Bell Rock, because there's not a lot of other Christmas songs to sing, they've all got to try to do it their own way. It's like a little bit different. That doesn't like sound just like that one. And they're all worse because of it, because it's not the definitive version of that.
Right.
So here comes Sam Smith doing his Adele thing, and it's immediately worse because it's not Adele.
Yeah. This is the song Hello, but it's literally Goodbye, right?
Yeah. But I'm way too good at them. I'm way too good at hellos. What does that person look like? I don't want to hang out with him at all.
Man, you know, this is... Actually, that's pretty funny.
Hello! How are you? I haven't seen you in weeks. How are you?
It's that guy in Groundhog Day.
Yeah, Ned Ryerson.
How'd you pull that name so quick?
Because I'm a trivia machine, Mark.
You said that so fast, it was as if you were expecting to be asked that question.
Yeah. Because I'm living Groundhog Day right now. I'm currently on take 136 of the same day.
What am I about to say?
Nailed it.
Oh, man, I totally lost my point. That completely distracted me.
I knew you were going to.
Oh, okay. So here's another fun contrast between Hello and this song. Hello is about her admitting fault. This song is about how he's faultless.
Mm.
Like, you think I'm heartless, but I'm not. I'm right. Just protective. Like, don't blame me for being this way.
Yeah.
And Hello is like, man, I did a bad... I shouldn't have been that way. I hope you forgive me now that I see how bad I was.
A different take on a different personality, man. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating stuff. Let's see if it gets any more interesting.
Damn my soul, I'm never gonna let you close to me, even though you mean the most to me, cause every time I open up it hurts, so I'm never gonna get too close to you, even when I mean the most to you, in case you go and leave me in the dirt, but every time you hurt me, the less that I cry, and every time you...
That chorus melody, or it's a pre-chorus, whatever it is, it sounds
right.
What does that sound like?
Everything.
My tongue. Yeah. I've heard it before.
Yeah. I think this is like one of those chord progressions, though, that you hear. There's always one song on the radio that has it, you know?
And now it's this one's turn.
Yeah. How about this? Is this song closer to Taylor Swift than Adele? To the new Taylor Swift?
No, there's not enough rapping happening here.
Oh, God, what a nightmare.
This is like, if old Taylor Swift had persisted...
Well, she's dead.
...and gone on... Right, I know, but if she hadn't died, she'd make songs that sound like this.
Right. But, like, I feel like Taylor Swift's all about the package, right? She's all about that, like, perfect prepackaged sound.
Yeah, but not anymore, because that old Taylor is dead.
Well, just because it's bad, I still feel like that's the end result of the production. She always feels very tightly designed.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking that Sam should be saying, look what you made me do.
That is what he's saying.
Yeah, you're right. Just not in those words.
I'm disappointed.
It's just too flat to say anything about. Like, at least with T-Swizz, we can get into how outrageously awful it is. This is just, like, pure vanilla. The destined for Macy's speakers, destined for your aunt's car stereo. Just, like...
yeah. Shopping around JCPenney.
Exactly. Yeah. I said Macy's. I'm a little bit more high class than Penny's, but...
hey. All right.
Nothing wrong with Penny's.
All right.
They got cool shirts.
No one has ever said that. You know what I like about JCPenney's? They got cool shirts.
They have shirts.
Oh, you got a cool shirt, JCPenney? I feel like
hell
this song...
yeah.
That's that hello guy. He came back. You love JCPenney.
I love JCPenney's. Where are you from?
Oh, hey, man. We talked before. I just tried to buy some pants. I don't need
to. I've missed you.
Hey, okay. I saw you earlier today. You know, I don't really know you so good. Are you okay?
I disagree. I feel like we've known each other for three lifetimes.
What's
also, your hair is amazing.
Touch it.
That chorus lands flat as a pancake, man. That is not impactful. It's not uplifting or soul-searching or mysterious or romantic. It is awkward dude trying to figure out how to get with some other guy or girl.
Yeah, I feel like the point of a gospel chorus is that they are an overwhelming emotional wall of sound.
I want to start crying when I hear that, Mark, and I'm nowhere close.
Exactly. And if what you're doing is you have a gospel chorus and you're just kind of lowering them so you can be just a little louder going, oh, like it just kind of sucks.
No thanks.
To do that.
No thanks.
I have an amazing slam for this song.
All right, let me brace myself.
Okay.
Okay, fully braced. Go ahead.
You ready? You good?
Okay. Yep.
This song isn't cool enough to play at an Old Navy.
Wow. I feel like Old Navy is just doing like up-tempo dance remixes of all your favorite hits from the 2000s these days, though.
That's true. Well, yeah, I guess. I feel like they're trying to brand themselves as like...
the hip-hop happening place to be?
I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say like...
they got cool shirts?
Aunt feels comfortable here, but you know that song and she doesn't.
Yeah. Old Navy's got cool shirts.
I've heard that about Old Navy and JCPenney.
Cooler shirts than Penny's.
Macy's has bad shirts. Ugh, what is that? A Macy's tee?
Yeah. It's kind of a big deal, so.
Where'd you get that polo?
From Marshall's.
Oh no.
It was $4.95.
Whoa. I don't even want to speak with you any longer, if that's the case.
Thumbs up or thumbs down? Is Sam Smith wearing a shirt in this album cover?
Oh, I don't know.
We only see his neck. But we see enough of his neck that it's kind of like, maybe...
I'm going to say he is always in the half... he is the Schrodinger shirt. He's always kind of has a shirt and always kind of doesn't have a shirt.
It's Schrodinger's shirt. He's existing in a spot that he both has a shirt and doesn't have a shirt at the same time.
I don't know if you heard me or if you on purpose just said what I did, but better.
Yeah, that's how I run things.
Okay.
No, 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 no. It's satisfying to stop him in.
Is it empowering?
This feels like whenever they invite one of the people back on American Idol who did pretty well in the past but didn't quite win, and they let them sing a song there, and they pull out one of these things, and it's like very made for TV, but everybody loves it because it's a famous name.
Yeah, you could like practically see the Chiron asking for you to text a number to send a vote for somebody.
Yeah. And Randy Jackson is like, dog, it's so good to have you back, dog. You really killed it.
Nice job. You nailed it.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. What an emotional re-entrance. Did you read the annotation for the whole song or just the chorus?
Just the chorus. Do you want to read the other one?
Oh, I'm happy to do it. I just didn't know if you did it yet.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Too good. It is a long one, so just stop me if you need me to. Too good of goodbyes, which tells of a turbulent... Oh, my God. This is already so good. Okay. About too good of goodbyes by six contributors. Too good of goodbyes, which tells of a turbulent personal relationship, is Sam Smith's first solo release since his 2015 James Bond theme, Writings on the Wall.
Which was, by all means, the worst James Bond theme from the Daniel Craig
era. The Craig
Bonds.
Era. Yeah, I completely agree. That Jack White song is superbly underrated.
Oh, hell yeah. I'll always I'll always support Jack White.
Support your local Jack White in this year's election. In a Beats 1 interview, Sam explained that only four songs on the album are about him, and Too Good of Goodbyes is one of them. He told Zane Lowe how the song was inspired by a real relationship. Quote, the song is about a relationship I was in, and it's basically about getting good and getting dumped. I'm still very, very single, Zane. I think I'm even more single than I was when I released In the Lonely Hour. He also said, at the time, I was trying to convince myself I was tough to protect myself. I was gearing up for what I knew would happen. I'm really not like that at all. In an interview with Nick Grimshaw on BBC Radio 1 on the morning the song dropped, Nick
That's such a BBC name, Nick Grimshaw.
BBC Radio 1 with Nick Grimshaw. Nick introduced Sam by saying that the vibes around Sam have definitely changed. And Sam agreed.
You got way Australian in the back half of that, mate. I'm sorry.
They had the interview at an Outback Steakhouse. He explained that the album, Due in November, is a tribute to the family and friends who supported him over the years, focusing on their lives, their ups and downs, rather than his own. Which I guess gives credence to the opening lyric, you must think that I'm stupid.
To write an album about my family and friends.
I just want to write a song about how they feel. You guys think I'm pretty dumb, huh?
Let's finish this off, Mark. We got 21 seconds.
Okay.
And every time you leave me, the quicker these tears dry. And every time you walk out, the less I love you. Baby, we don't stand a chance. It's sad, but it's true. I'm way too good at goodbyes.
Sad But True is the worst lyric in that song.
Mm-hmm. Explain the subtext.
No one's allowed to say Sad But True since Metallica said it.
You should never be saying how sad something is. There's only specific circumstances that makes any sense.
It's like saying, that's so funny, instead of laughing.
Right.
Don't say it. If you have to say it, it's not, clearly, because you'd be laughing if it was.
That's really funny. I feel like there's like that's one of those rules though, like in writing too. Like, don't just say how I'm meant to
show. Don't tell.
Say, don't show.
Right. Not in Sam Smith's world. He's going to do what he wants.
You can't stop a Sam Smith whenever he gets on the rage train.
Well, Mark, the time has come to give a recommendation. Thumbs up or thumbs down on this one?
Well, you know, I, at this point in my life, am so close to reaching a total of 300 songs on my 2017 playlist.
Man.
I'm like 20
Don't
from
do
getting
it.
There.
Don't just take it to get the numbers up. Are you crazy?
Yeah, and you know, I'm looking at how much I want to hit that number. I'm looking at this song, and I think, I've come too far to take the easy way out. I'm not taking it.
Good call, man. I'm proud of you. I'm about 100 less than you. I've got like 195. I'm just trying to round it out to a nice even 100 or 200 here, hopefully before the end of the year. But yeah.
Well, most of mine are just Sun Kill Moon B-sides.
Yeah, so you took the entirety of that Sun Kill Moon album.
The one where he talks about how he's glad Michael Jackson is dead?
Yeah, it's over 2.5 hours of material, so.
Yeah.
A bit excessive, but. All right, there's your Sam Smith. Mark.
What?
For the last time before we talk end of the year stuff, tell me about what you've been listening to this week.
Literally nothing.
That's it?
Yeah, it's been a weird week.
Man. All right. Well, then I got some things to talk about.
Okay.
First off, I finally listened to A Crow Looked at Me by Mount Eerie.
Oh.
I finally said, you know what? I'm going on a long drive here. What's the best thing I could do? Probably put on some really sad music and think about death for a little while.
Well, how did it go?
Time to play the game, Mark. Guess which song I started crying. Guess which one did it.
If you're like me, it's the one where the mood picks up when he talks about the wind blowing and the door shutting.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one?
I don't think that's the one. I don't remember it that well.
Okay.
Track 4, Forest Fire. I started crying.
Oh, that's a James Blake song. You listened to the wrong album.
Oh, crap. I thought it sounded familiar. No, I started crying at Forest Fire and then didn't stop until the very end.
And tears, you were driving?
Yeah, streaming down my cheeks. I'm sniveling, I'm wiping them away, but I'm surviving. Made it to the end of that thing in one go. This thing is an incredible achievement. Holy cow, this thing is really, really powerfully written.
Wow, you like it that much?
No, but I respect it a whole lot. It's the kind of thing where like I listen to it once, and I don't know if I want to listen to it again anytime soon. It's kind of like a sad movie in that way, or a really powerful film that just leaves a strong impression. Musically, it is very simple. It's the backing guitar is so simplistic, it's almost not even there. But the forefront is the lyrics, the intensely personal struggles detailed with the loss of his wife, and trying to come to some understanding in the aftermath and the months following. I picked out some highlights. Real Death, I think, is kind of the thesis statement of this album.
Mm-hmm.
Opening with that great line, death is real, someone's there and then they're not. And he continues to refer back to that song throughout the other tracks in the album by saying death is real, by just continually emphasizing the loss there. I've taken Forest Fire since it made me cry. I guess at some point I did kind of settle down, but I got teary-eyed again back with Toothbrush and Trash, where he finally decides to take out the trash that was in the garbage bin of the bathroom upstairs.
Yeah,
which is like a strangely personal, emotional story.
That's the song where the door closes. Whenever he's like, the wind blows, hears the door close, he thinks it's her.
Right. Yeah, that one got me again. So. Yeah, it's heavy, man. I think it's looking pretty strong on a year-end list, I gotta say. I think it's like, if something could move me that much emotionally, I think it's something about the quality of the writing there. And the fact that it takes something that is so universal, but makes it so deeply personal, is remarkable. Some great writing on this thing.
Yeah, it's a journey.
It'll knock you on your butt. I also wanted to say, like, you know, I was halfway through kind of frustrated, like, man, none of these songs end in a satisfying way. It's like one line and then it's over. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, thematically, like how a life is just cut out from under you and you just lose someone like that. Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then I just started crying some more. It was emotional, man.
Totally.
I think a lot of people are going to be talking about this at the end of the year, and I totally get why. I don't know that it's going to be one that I'll maybe ever put on again in a positive spirit. Like, can't wait to listen to that again. But it is a remarkable piece of songwriting there.
Yeah, I don't think it's intended. I don't think the artist intended for that to be how it's listened to, you know?
Sure. Like, it's art, man.
I've been thinking a lot about that conversation we had like 3 months ago during the LCD Sound System review.
Yeah.
Because had finished Kim Gordon's book, and it occurred to me that I haven't fully considered the way that I approach analyzing music.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's actually, I think, easier to analyze music as a product than it is an art form.
Yeah.
If you don't think about it. And I'm trying to reevaluate the way that I approach things like that. You know?
That's cool. Yeah, I hear that.
I feel like that my first instinct, too, was that way. It took me like 3 listens to get to the point where you did. But like my third revisit, and I was like, but there's still this part of me where it's not satisfying my expectations for folk music, you know, which is obviously not at all what it was built to do. It was built to communicate something. And it's really good at doing that.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, just speaking personally here, I lost a member of my close immediate family this past year. And I think there maybe being closer to death and recalling some of those emotions helped me at tapping into the emotional power of this album.
Did you find that like a reassuring experience?
Not really. No, because it's case does mention throughout, like there's nothing to learn here. I don't want to learn anything. It's just, it sucks. And it's just happening.
Right.
But there, I mean, we do get like months out from way it happens. And of course, like his daughter is going to grow up and have a great life and he's going to be there to experience that. And so there maybe is some hope there. But I don't think it's acknowledged on this record. I think it's just very straightforward. I don't know.
But I think the way the album opens with a contradiction, them saying it's not death's not for making into art, in the art that he made about death, I think it's like, I think the very existence of that song is proof that there's a way to make something beautiful out of anything terrible, you know?
Fair enough. Yeah. That is the thesis statement of this record, though. What a great singular tune that is.
Yeah, it's really good.
Cool. So that's one I listened to on your recommendation, Capacity by Big Thief.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Man, this thing is like 4 or 5 listens from clicking for me. I can feel it like it's bubbling under the surface. Like it's there. And I'm like, yeah. Like when some stuff on Shark Smile kicks in or Mythological Beauty. Or some stuff on Watering. Like, there are moments where I'm feeling it bubbling under the surface, but it hasn't quite clicked into place yet. So I'm a little hesitant this late in the year to try to force feed this thing down and maybe get it there. But I like it a lot. I think it's really satisfying folk music. So like you say, like, oh, you know, Mount Erie is not satisfying enough. This is very satisfying in that sense. The musicality behind the singing is really good, but the lyrics are also really compelling. And dude, we haven't talked about best album covers of this year, but I think this could be a real strong contender for best album cover of the year. That thing is, really evocative in my mind.
Yeah, totally.
The multiple meaning it suggests. I think it's really good.
I've been thinking a lot about that, and I have to agree with you. I listened to that album quite literally the week it came out, which I think was in like June.
Yeah.
And it took until like 2 weeks ago of me just like, ah, I should try listening again.
Right.
So I totally get it. There's something very plain faced about the album aesthetically that it takes a while to come to grips with. I'm going to write really good versions of familiar song structures.
Yeah. Because the chord progression in a lot of these songs does feel very familiar, but it's well performed and it's engaging to listen to.
Right. Yeah.
So it'll be on my top 10 list probably next year.
Okay.
We'll see. Then the last thing I listened to, I finally got around to checking out Planetarium, which is the compilation album from Sufjan Stevens and Nico Munley and James McAllister and friends. You didn't check this out at all, did you?
You know, I, for just a hot minute, thought you were going to say Nico Case, and I was going to kick myself in the face for not listening.
Not that Nico.
But now I feel great about not listening to it.
So this is a long rumored project that's existed out there in like live recordings and behind the scenes footage. But apparently there was an entire suite composed by these folks that represents each of the planets in the solar system, as well as other things like Halley's Comet and the sun and the moon and other stuff. I'm a guy that loves concept albums in theory. Like I love the idea of the concept album. But the execution almost always leaves me disappointed. Like, because even if they did realize it perfectly, I still probably wouldn't like it. There's something about the overt storytelling, the realization of that, that I think is just always ends up corny and cheesy and ridiculous. But, like, I don't hear that Sufjan Stevens is making a song or a collection of songs about every planet in the solar system. Like, I got to check that out right now. That sounds awesome.
Right.
And so this ends up being extremely long and extremely uninteresting. This thing is bloated. It feels spacious and foreign and distant in a way that Sufjan, I don't think, has ever sounded, even on something like The Age of Odds. There are weird spaces where he uses a an auto-tune device to make his voice sound more spacey.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of confounding throughout.
Really?
Yeah, I really didn't care for it at all. To the point where, like, I got four tracks in and I was like, I'm done with this. I can't do it anymore. It's too long. It's too, I don't know, over the top. I'm just going to pull out a couple of samples so you can hear some of this. Here's a bit from Jupiter. So we get a lot of, like, big percussive beats in that one because Jupiter's the biggest planet. Doesn't quite do it for me there. Let's see if we can play a little bit of that auto-tune. Here's from Saturn. So if you're into that kind of thing, it might be your jam. The only space that I found it actually enjoyable is the very last track, which is Mercury, because it feels the most like a typical Sufjan song. Real nice piano there. It sounds kind of like a B-side off of Carrion Lowell. I like that one quite a bit, but you've got to get through an hour and a half of material to get to the last song there.
Yeah, that's a lot. That sounds very corny.
Yeah, there's a 15-minute track for Earth. There is, like, major detours here that just feel way too ambitious, way too unsatisfying musically.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real disappointment.
You know, it was funny listening to those first two tracks because I feel like that is an extremely loud, like, big version of Sufjan Stevens. But if Daft Punk released that song, you'd be like, wow, they're so meditative now. They're so calm.
Right. Yeah, who knows? Maybe some different people in there, or maybe a few less people, I don't know, might have resulted in a different project. But I found it to be rather unsatisfying.
Okay, I'll skip it then.
Yeah, no reason to waste your time at this point in the year. But as we look ahead, there are a couple of albums still to come out that unfortunately we just will not get time to cover. The two at the top of my list are Utopia by Bjork, which is out now, and that upcoming album from Miguel, which will be out, I think, first weekend of December there.
Yes.
I think they're going to be pretty good.
The Miguel album?
Yeah, I love Miguel. You love Miguel.
I do love Miguel. I'm ready to be sexed in my ears once again for the very first time.
We just needed some kind of, like, outside horniness, like you said, and we're going to get that with Miguel here at the very end of the year.
You and I have just been too horny in isolation. We need an outside force to exert pressure.
Or we need to come together and celebrate our horniness.
Wow. This is way too personal.
All right. Well, the next time we get together, Mark, you will be here with me. We will be engaging in our favorite time of the year festivities, coitus, end of the year coitus. We've got a power pack of end of the year podcasts for you. Just like last year, we're going to run the table. We're opening things up with the Beatsies, which are our annual awards given for all kinds of reasons and purposes. Then we've got to cover our top 50 tracks of the year, as well as our own personal top. Are we doing 15 albums this year, Mark? We did 15 last year.
Kind of makes sense to me if you're okay with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Give you some good like range of albums. Right. Don't have to narrow it too much.
Exactly. It's like you got five that are strong and then your top 10 there.
Yeah, totally. You got your they're not honorable mentions per se, but they're top kind 15. Of honorable mentions. Yeah.
Top 15. All right. So we'll do our top 15 albums as well, an episode apiece for both my choices and Mark's. We'll engage in a little attack and defend, as is tradition this time of the year, and just put a cap on all things 2017. Mark, are you excited to finally wrap this year up?
You know what? This is always my favorite time of year. This is a particularly interesting year in music to rank a bunch of nonsense, and I could not be happier to do it.
I can't wait to arbitrarily rank things that you care about.
Oh my God. That is such a true sentence.
Yeah. Any predictions for how things are going to go this year? Any feelings you've got going on?
We turn it around on Sam Smith. Put his album at the top, Taylor Swift in the second spot. Both future albums, 3 and 4, but we'll have the different ones in a different order. And then the rest of the albums are going to be any album involving Mark Kozelek in any capacity.
Sounds great. We can't wait to have you there along with us. Look for those best of the year episodes to fill out your month of December. Keep you warm and cozy throughout this holiday time. Hope you're listening to everything else you wanted to listen to this year as well. Certainly there have been a number of great albums out there for you. We'll keep listening here. Please do us a favor and send us some love on the internet. Give us a 5-star review in that iTunes store. Hit us up on the social medias. All that good stuff. We'd love to hear from you, and we appreciate your support throughout this year. Season 2 could not have been the success it was without all of your support. So thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll see you next time for the official second annual Beatsies Awards for 2017. Until next time, play that outro music!